Bay Packers fans. Welcome to Railbird Central at Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. Joined this morning by our live blog director, Jamie Snowden. We're talking some Packers football. We're looking back at a Packers loss, 34-28 to the San Francisco 49ers on opening day in the NFL. But it most certainly is a good day. Step off the ledge if you need to be talked out of it. It was only one game. There is a lot of season left. The Packers can still be Super Bowl champions. This season's not over, folks. No doubt about it. I mean, no reason to be happy about a loss. But, you know, you live to fight another day. And there's many more days ahead here at the beginning of the season. This was a very good game between two very good teams. These are two teams that will probably, unless something unforeseen happens, they will both be in the playoffs come January. Heck, these teams might even see each other again in the playoffs come January. And the 49ers were definitely the better team on Sunday. No doubt about it. They earned the game. They won. The Packers turned the ball over two times, which I think was probably the decisive factor in the game. Had the Packers not turned the ball over twice, maybe we're talking about a different outcome. But, you know, a lot of things the Packers did wrong, and not helped out by the referees, by the way. You know, the Packers' run game couldn't get going, especially in the first half. Not going a little bit in the second half, but by then it was almost a little bit too late. They couldn't contain Anquan Boldin, who literally killed the Packers. Couldn't contain Colin Kaepernick passing the ball as he throws for over 400 yards in the probably at least the best passing game of his young career. I was really impressed with Colin Kaepernick, how quickly he became such a good passer. I was, you know, well aware he had the athleticism and was a great runner. I was a little dubious about his passing, but after yesterday's performance, that's being put to rest pretty quickly. And, you know, it's of course, those two turnovers were just killer. One by JerMichael Finley that went in and out of his hands and into the defenders. The other by Eddie Lacy. Both Finley and Lacy having up and down games. You know, JerMichael Finley getting redemption, getting a late touchdown, and doing a couple other nice things with nice catches later on in the ball game. Eddie Lacy making up for his fumble with a touchdown of his own late in the game, doing a nice job on a screen pass as well. Up and down games for both of them. Hopefully, better things ahead for them. But yeah, I mean, I can't say here in a loss is a good thing, but there is a lot of reasons for optimism. Quite a bit, quite a few of them. I mean, there's lots of places we can look and say the Packers are going to be in good shape. And the number one reason, if there is one reason you should be optimistic about the Packers this season, it is that they should, at least by the time the bye is over, get back two members of their secondary that were torched on Sunday. No doubt about it. Packers secondary looked poor. And the safeties in particular look pitiful. MD Jennings, Jerron McMillan, not good. Jerron McMillan getting torched several times. I saw MD Jennings. He got beat on the one touchdown by Vernon Davis. Other than that, he didn't look too bad, although giving up a touchdown is never a good thing. And yeah, I mean, the Packers needed Morgan Burnett something fierce. When they get Morgan Burnett back, I got to think he'll be paired with M.D. Jennings in the secondary. And I think that's the best combination the Packers could have. I was once hopeful for Jerron McMillan, but his I thought he was more of an athlete, and he was just simply a step slow on everything yesterday. And perhaps that you know, comes with time, comes with experience. He learns a little bit more and is a step quicker because he's able to diagnose things quicker. But I definitely didn't see it yesterday. That was pitiful by Jerron McMillan. Absolutely pitiful. Missed tackles. You name it. I mean, he did not look good out there. So I think, you know, Morgan Burnett comes back. And who knows? Morgan Burnett could be as back as quick as this upcoming week, this upcoming Sunday against the Washington Redskins. Who knows? So there's a lot of reason for optimism there. That and, you know, Casey Hayward, the report from Bob McGinn at the Milwaukee Journal-Sentinel, he's expected to miss the first month of the season. But now remember, of course, the Packers have the early bye this year. They have three straight games to open the season, and then in week four they get a bye. So that's a month right there. They come back to play in week five, and it's possible Hayward will be able to return by then. And not that it's a given, but you know, that's looking like his timetable for return. So, you know, once Casey Hayward comes back, he's going to be the nickel cornerback. You know, here's how it's going to work out. You're going to have Sam Shields and Tremont Williams at the perimeter cornerback positions. You're going to have Casey Hayward as the nickel. And then that's going to push Micah Hyde to the dime. And, you know, the Packers don't play dime all that much. Yeah, they play it occasionally. But that'll be an upgrade. Micah Hyde won't be on the field nearly as often. It'll push Jarrett Bush off the field almost entirely, you know, except for goal line packages if Jarrett Bush plays there or something. And I think the Packers' dime defense will be that much better with Casey Hayward in there and the nickel defense as well. I mean, you saw yesterday how Micah Hyde, bless his heart, you know, his relative weakness is, you know, coverage in space. Micah Hyde is fine blitzing the quarterback, which in the regular season doesn't come all that often. You know, it seemed like they were doing it every other play during the preseason, blitzing him. I almost don't know why they do that. They do that with the inside linebackers as well during the preseason. They blitz the hell out of Terrell Manning and Sam Barrington. And then they don't do it nearly as much in the regular season. So, I mean, I realize there's nothing to lose in a preseason game. But heck, if you're not going to do it that much, isn't it almost more important to give them reps in coverage? Anyway, you know, Micah Hyde goes and gets beat on a couple plays. You know, and it's tough. I mean... There aren't many guys out there that can stick with Vernon Davis in coverage. But, you know, certainly with Casey Hayward and Morgan Burnett out there, the Packers have a better chance. You know, it's really tough, I think, to complain again about the Packers' game plan. You know, the Packers went with a lot of zone coverage yesterday, and I don't blame them for doing so. And then they went with the contain rush. Instead of putting on this fierce pass rush, they played contain, where they kept Colin Kaepernick in the pocket. And I don't know, maybe you turn Clay Matthews loose and let everybody else contain, perhaps. But, you know, I just saw the game yesterday coming down to the players. The 49ers had more playmakers. They had Anquan Boldin, they had Vernon Davis, and then the Packers' secondary couldn't match them. They couldn't match the size and the strength of Anquan Boldin and Vernon Davis. You know, I think playing that zone coverage was the right thing to do. They kept the defensive backs' eyes in front of them so they could see the quarterback, and they kept Kaepernick contained. You know, they beat him with the pass, but I I didn't want to see the alternative. I didn't want to see the 49ers beat them the same way on with the run like they did last year. You know, when the win was more decisive to me last year in the playoffs. The 49ers won more decisively. This time the Packers kept it close and should have been closer had it not been for the two turnovers. You know, the Packers had a chance to win that game. It was amazing that the Packers were even that close considering the 2-0 turnover margin. The Packers will be in much better shape, too, to force turnovers with Morgan Burnett and Casey Hayward back there. Casey Hayward of the 6 interceptions as a rookie. Yeah, they're missing that. No doubt about it. No doubt about it. Other reasons for optimism. How about Jordy? How about the wide receivers in general? Well, I suppose we can probably toss James Jones out of the mix. He had 2 drops yesterday. Really disappointed for James Jones especially after the best season of his career last year in which he had very few drops. Has a poor first game. But other than James Jones, you got Randall Cobb and you got Jordy Nelson. And Jordy Nelson just played lights out. You know, especially for a guy who missed time almost all of training camp with following, you know, minor knee surgery. The knee certainly didn't look like a problem for Jordy Nelson, did it? What were Jordy Nelson's stats here? I'm pulling them up. 7 catches for 130 yards and a touchdown for Jordy Nelson. That's an average of 18.6 yards per catch. Randall Cobb wasn't too shabby either. 7 catches for 108 yards and a touchdown, 15.4 yards per catch. Fantastic by both of them. You know, I thought Nelson was particularly good, mainly because of that catch he made in the fourth quarter that set up the Packers' go-ahead touchdown late in the game. Set up Eddie Lacy's touchdown run that briefly gave the Packers, what was it, a 28-24 edge? You know, that grab by Nelson along the sideline, outstretched, tiptoeing to stay in. That was fantastic. I mean, that was far from his only play of the game, too. I mean, 7 catches for 130 yards. He was making plays all over, breaking tackles, putting spin moves out there. Randall Cobb with the spin move to get in the end zone. The first Packers' first score of the game to tie it up the end of the first quarter, I believe. You know, if Randall Cobb doesn't make that exact move where he spin to the inside of the field, he doesn't reach the end zone. He had to make that exact move and that exact spin, or he wouldn't have got the TD. He wouldn't have reached pay dirt. That was a great move. You know, both those guys doing really well. You know, they did fantastic. Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb. I mean, the Packers, they need some help. You know, James Jones has to step up. Jarrett Boykin has to have, you know, a catch, I think. He's got to get involved in the game a little bit. Not that Jarrett Boykin needs to be a big part of the offense, but, you know, just needs to take a little pressure off. And Jermichael Finley needs to be more consistent. You saw he's an incredible athlete. I mean, Jermichael Finley can be dominant, as he showed when he, you know, got to the end zone on along the sideline there. He was definitely, you know, he was a weapon along the sideline all day. Jermichael Finley was 5 catches for 56 yards. You know, and how about the weird call by the officials? Yeah, the officials made a big mistake. I mean, that sequence of events is so hard to describe. So the Packers, you know, I forget even what yard line they're exactly at. They were around the 5-yard line or whatever. Packers stuff the 49ers on 3rd and 1, right? So it becomes, and there's what? There's the penalty on the play. And the Packers could have, you know, accepted the penalty, or they did accept it, and it becomes 3rd and 6. They could have declined it, and it could have been fourth and one. And if I were the head coach of the Green Bay Packers, I would have declined the penalty and taken my chances on fourth and one. You know, and that's not to say the 49ers still couldn't have gone for it. They might have gone for it on fourth and one. They could have, and they could have converted, but I would have taken my chances. There's a chance they might have just kicked the field goal. Again, remember, this was, you know, early in the game. This wasn't, you know, the fourth quarter or anything. This was still when the game was very much in doubt. Well, I mean, the game was in doubt the whole time. I mean, it was back and forth most of the day. And yeah, I mean, Mike McCarthy defends his decision to accept that penalty, and I think it's the wrong call. I mean, the Packers just stuffed them on third and one. If you just stuffed them on third and one, heck, you stand a chance to stuff them on fourth and one if they go for it. And if they don't go, if they go for the field goal, well, great. You held them to a field goal instead of a touchdown. Anyway. So they accept the penalty. It's third and six. And then this is the play in which Colin Kaepernick runs out of bounds and Clay Matthews makes the tackle out of bounds for a personal foul penalty. Clay Matthews, I think, was a little too jacked up in the first half, almost into the second half there, too. The problem with Clay Matthews is he left his feet twice on those tackles. And I think, you know, some people said, well, it's great. They're showing physicality or whatever. They're showing the toughness they didn't, you know, show last year. Well, I don't care. Do it when they're inbounds. Show you're tough when the player is inbound. I thought it was a stupid penalty on Clay Matthews leaping to go hit Colin Kaepernick. You know, and then, of course, the melee ensues on the sideline. Joe Staley, 49ers offensive tackle, retaliates, gets into a shoving match with Clay Matthews. So they're offsetting penalties. Well, what should have happened is they were both dead ball penalties. The penalties both happened after the play, after Colin Kaepernick went out of bounds. So the play should have stood. It should have been fourth and two. But instead, the refs, you know, they call offsetting penalties and play the down over. So it's third and six again. And of course, you know the result then. The 49ers go and score the touchdown. Well, it should have been fourth and two. And referee Bill Levy admitted the error after the game. First of all, I can't believe Bill Levy spoke to the media. I mean, that's just, referees just don't do that. Even when they're wrong, they don't speak to the media. I mean, sometimes the NFL will go speak for them. The NFL at times will admit they made the wrong call. The NFL will admit, like, you know, later in the week, like, isn't there a show on the NFL network where they have the head of officiating on or something like that? Or it's on NFL Total Access, whatever. Yeah, I mean, the Packers got screwed there by that call. I mean, and again, fourth and two, the 49ers still may have gone for it on fourth and two. But again, I mean, still, it was better than third and six, if you ask me. So that was a weird series of events. Absolutely mind-blowing. I mean, to go with, you know, starting with Mike McCarthy's decision to accept the penalty, to go to the personal foul penalty on Clay Matthews, and then the offsetting penalties, and then the wrong call by the referees. That was a weird series of downs. That was one weird series there. I don't know how else to put it. That those couple plays there, some of the most baffling I've seen in a long time. The game in general was great, wasn't it? Wow, that was the most entertaining football game I've watched in a long time. You know, in years of Packers football, I enjoyed watching that game a lot. I was so mystified by the athleticism of individual players. I went wow several times over the course of the game. When Jordy Nelson made that catch on the sideline, I went wow. When Randall Cobb made that spin move to score the touchdown, I went wow. When Anquan Boldin was catching many passes from Colin Kaepernick, I went wow. And the Navarro Bowman, remember late in the game there, Navarro Bowman broke up a pass intended for Jermichael Finley. That was absolutely a stupendous play from an inside linebacker who had to cover a ton of ground in split seconds to break up that pass from Rodgers to Finley in the fourth quarter, intended for Finley. Didn't get there because Navarro Bowman broke it up. That was an incredible play. You know, that was, you know, a lot of people were complaining about the play of Brad Jones yesterday. I even got one tweet yesterday where it said Brad Jones was out of position, and it wasn't a case of Brad Jones being out of position. It's just that he was a step slow. Brad Jones is not Navarro Bowman. Packers don't have any Navarro Bowmans at their inside linebacker position. And that could be the Packers, you know, weakest position on the team. They are not very good at inside linebacker. A.J. Hawk, Brad Jones, those guys might be assignment sure, but, you know, they are not the athletes in either size or strength of a Patrick Willis, of a Navarro Bowman. There's a big difference there between the Packers and the 49ers. You know, I'm sure the hamstring injury by Brad Jones is not helping matters at all. You know, that might have to be a position where the Packers look for a big-time upgrade in the upcoming NFL draft. You know, they might have to go out and grab an inside linebacker in the first round next year. I mean, the NFL draft's a long way away, but they need help there. You know, A.J. Hawk and Brad Jones are just, you know, moderate NFL players. They are average NFL inside linebackers. Not above average at all. Both of them are average. You know, even if they're getting paid, like, above average. I don't know if they are. They're probably getting average pay as well. Getting paid like starters, but average overall. Same thing with safety, right? Wow, I mean, you sit there and you had to watch the play of 49ers rookie safety Eric Reed and had to be impressed as well. You know, it was my official prediction back in April that the Packers would take Eric Reed with their first round draft choice. Well, Eric Reed didn't even get to the Packers selection. He went, you know, far earlier than almost anybody predicted in the NFL draft. You know, I forget the, you know, exact position the 49ers drafted in, but what, he came off the board like almost 10 picks before the Packers took Dayton Jones. And I'm still very hopeful for Dayton Jones, no doubt about it. You know, I'm not going to get on his case after one game. And I think it was a case of yesterday, the Packers, you know, that of all the defensive linemen, especially on passing downs, and Dayton Jones out there on, you know, playing pretty much on third downs and interior pass rusher. You know, he wasn't out there on first down or anything. You know, they brought him out there to help contain Colin Kaepernick. I don't think they set Dayton Jones loose at all. He was simply there to keep Kaepernick in front of him, almost acting like somewhat of a spy. Not quite. But, I mean, he was not out there shooting gaps or anything. Dayton Jones was just keeping Colin Kaepernick in the pocket. And I think there will be a time in the future where they set Dayton Jones loose, and he is going to do fine. I'm really excited to see that day. And it'll be interesting to see what he does this upcoming week against RG3. I mean, the Packers are going to be faced with pretty much, you know, a very similar offense that they saw against the 49ers. You know, are they going to do the same thing? Are they going to try to keep RG3 to the pocket and let him beat him with his arm? You know, how good is RG3's arm? Is it as good as Colin Kaepernick's? Does he have a receiving core that's as good as Anquan Boldin and Vernon Davis? You know, what are the Packers going to do? What are the Packers' safeties? Are they going to be in better shape next week? Well, they'll be in better shape if they have Morgan Burnett back, that's for sure. It's going to be interesting. The Packers have a tough schedule in front of them. You know, especially the road games. I think some people have looked at the schedule and look, okay, 49ers week one, Redskins, or should we be part of the group that doesn't call the Redskins the Redskins anymore? We call them that team in Washington. Okay, we'll try that here on Railbird Central if I don't forget. Okay, no, we won't call them the Redskins anymore because that's racist and terrible. They're that team in Washington. So people look at the schedule and they see the Packers facing Washington week two, and then they see them face the Bengals in week three. And I think some people have thought, whoa, I mean, the Packers could start the season 0-3. And no doubt about it, I think it is a tough schedule to begin the season. But I'm definitely not ready to say the Packers are going to go 0-3. I think they'll bounce back next week with a home game at Lambeau Field and be able to beat, you know, RG3 and the Redskins. You know, they need a better performance from the pass defense for sure. But I don't think the Redskins have as good a receiving core as the 49ers. You know, it's a little bit weaker. And who really, I mean, we'll see tonight. The Redskins, Washington, plays tonight on Monday Night Football. We'll see how effective RG3 is this evening. You know, is he the same guy after injuring his knee last year? You know, there's been so much talk in the off season about, you know, can even RG3 start by the opener? Well, he's going to start. Is he going to be the same player? And are they going to use him as much in the running game? Are they going to use him as much with the read option? It's definitely going to be a challenge for the Packers defense. You know, I still don't think the Packers get Casey Hayward back by next week, but they might have Morgan Burnett back. Hopefully he's in good shape. They could use him. I mean, you don't want another setback, though, either. You don't want to bring him back too early and then have him injure his hamstring once again. I mean, that's good for nobody. Morgan Burnett, by the way, Morgan Burnett played every single snap from scrimmage in 2012. He was one of, like, only two defenders in the entire National Football League. Wasn't him and James Laurinaitis from St. Louis, the linebacker there? They were the only two defenders in the entire NFL to play every single snap last season. So Morgan Burnett's streak comes to an end. You know, he had played, and the season before that, he played a ton as well. I'm not sure he played every single snap, but I don't think he missed a game in 2011 either, right? In fact, wasn't it a case where Morgan Burnett was playing with a cast on his hand for a while? Did he have a broken thumb or something like that? I forget exactly what happened. But anyway, Morgan Burnett's streak of consecutive snaps, consecutive games comes to an end. You know, he's been largely healthy ever since his rookie year when he tore his ACL. You know, has come back and played very well since that time. So disappointing that, you know, had to happen. But the Packers will be definitely needing him next week. If he's healthy, the Packers could use his services. And, you know, just by the way here as well, I don't think I've, you know, mentioned it enough, though. how well the Packers' run defense played yesterday. Kind of is my last point of the show here. Packers' front seven yesterday stuffed the 49ers and hopefully will continue to stuff teams throughout the season. Almost to a man, the Packers' front seven did an incredible job in the run game. Really. I mean, go through them here. B.J. Raji, Ryan Pickett, Johnny Jolly, C.J. Wilson, Clay Matthews, Nick Perry, Mike Neal, Brad Jones, A.J. Hawk. There's nine players I just rattled off. All nine of them played fantastic against the run yesterday. You know, say what you will about Brad Jones and A.J. Hawk in coverage. You know, things like that. And I don't think they set the pass rushers loose, so I'm not really sure it's their fault to blame the pass rush. But as far as stopping the run goes, incredible. You know, B.J. Raji and Ryan Pickett had a great game stuffing the run. Did really good there. Did their jobs. Did what was asked of them. You know, the 49ers, here's the stats of 49ers rushing. The 49ers had 90 yards rushing on 34 carries. That's an average of only 2.6 yards a carry. Frank Gore had, you know, 44 yards on 21 carries. That's an average of 2.1 yards for Frank Gore. Kendall Hunter had 6 carries for 24 yards. Heck, he was their best producer in yards per rush. Kendall Hunter had 4.0 yards per carry. And Colin Kaepernick had only 7 rushes for 22 yards, an average of 3.1 yards. You know, the read option, which, you know, was given so much attention the entire offseason, pretty much a non-factor. 49ers ran it a couple of times. It wasn't a beautiful, the one time Colin Kaepernick faked the read option handoff and Clay Matthews read it perfectly and just went after Kaepernick right away. He like sacked him for a 7-yard loss. Was it even counted as a sack? Because was, you know, do they count that as a run? I forget. But it was a big time loss regardless. And it was just read perfectly by Clay Matthews. Anyway, it's past 9 o'clock here on Railbird Central. Thank you, everybody, so much for joining us here on a Monday morning, folks. You know, like I said, step off the ledge. There's a lot of season left. The Packers get ready this week for a game against that team in Washington. you get to check them out on Monday Night Football tonight. Washington playing tonight. Who they play? Philadelphia, right, on Monday Night Football. So enjoy the game tonight as you get a chance to look at RG3. And hey, we'll see you later, everybody, folks. On behalf of Jamie Snowden, I'm Brian Carey. We'll be back on Wednesday morning, every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, here at Cheesehead TV, 8:30 a.m. Central Time is Railbird Central. So we'll see you later, folks. I leave you today with a song called Rosie by String Cheese Incident on Psy Fidelity Records. See you later, everyone. Go Pack, go.